Chapter 9. 1917. British forces in continued drive, bombardment on the Flanders front intensive. Daily sketch. Eleanor could never quite recall every detail of the ensuing chain of events. When she tried to put together each lingering scene in her mind's eye, she felt as if she were struggling with a jigsaw puzzle. She could not identify the edge pieces that, once slotted into place, would create an outer frame to help her construct the complete picture. And there was not just one element, but many, reminding her of the stereo-optic machines she had played with at the fair, a clutch of cards beside her on the table ready to slip into the viewer. Each card had two photographs that appeared to be identical, yet when she looked through the viewer, the images came together, so she could see perspective through the lens, as if at any moment the people who had been photographed would begin to move. In the days to come, a memory would sometimes make an abrupt entry into her consciousness without warning and, like lightning, interrupt whatever else she was thinking about. In time, she was able to recollect reaching the house after killing the German soldiers. Recollection brought with it the lightness of relief, a reminder that they were lucky, so very fortunate, not to see another soul as they returned to their home. Home, what a soothing word it was, wrapping itself around her, keeping her safe. They came home, though the comfort would not last. They entered the kitchen. Cecily was still moaning, louder now when she saw her mother. Isabel and Charlotte took only a second to look them up and down before they began to move with speed. It was then that Eleanor realized their clothes were smeared with blood and mud. "Eleanor, Cecily, remove your clothes. Now, hurry. Charlotte, burn anything with even a speck of blood. Use the stove, not a bonfire in the garden. Be quick. Girls, go and wash yourselves from head to toe." She looked at Charlotte again. "The boots don't have blood on them, but brush them clean and leave them by the stove. I want them as dry as bone."
They tried to interfere with Cecily, said Eleanor.
"Interfere?" said Isabel.
"Oh, no, no, my darling girl."
Charlotte took Cecily in her arms. Eleanor watched as Isabel touched Charlotte on the shoulder and for a second wondered if she would begin to tell her mother how to use a pistol.
"Charlotte, there will be time for your tears later," said Isabel. "You must do as I say with all haste, or your daughters will be paraded in the square and shot." She turned to Eleanor. "The gun?"
Eleanor handed over the weapon and ammunition. She had just killed two men in cold blood, and she knew even more German soldiers had lost their lives when the train derailed. Hungry young German soldiers, perhaps no more than boys, who had no fight in them, had been crushed to death. But she had saved her sister from injury, to her body, at least. Within 20 minutes, Eleanor and Cecily were standing in the kitchen wearing fresh nightgowns. The floor had been scrubbed of any mud they had brought in. 40 minutes later, the clothing they had worn on their mission to derail the train had burned through. Charlotte added wood to the fire so not even a scorched scrap of cloth would be discovered. Their boots were brushed clean and polished, then lined up with other footwear by the back door. Isabel checked the garden and the house for any telltale signs that the DeWitt women were saboteurs and murderers of German soldiers. "I must leave now," said Isabel, as the golden sunshine of early morning shone through the kitchen window. "Here's what you must do next." Isabel explained that Cecily must take to her bed. All the keening had given her the look of a girl with a very bad cold, so that was her alibi. Eleanor must rest for an hour or two, then make ready for school and attend classes as usual. "When they find the two soldiers, they will know they are looking for a woman. The state of one of the soldiers, at least, will indicate what he was about, and that means they will, in all likelihood, be searching the houses where there are women of an age to tempt young men who are far from home. Be careful. Say as little as possible. You all went to bed last night at the usual time, though Charlotte has been up, ministering to Cecily, bringing her a hot water bottle and tea to ease the effects of her cold. And as Eleanor and Cecily share a room, she didn't sleep well either. You're all tired,
That is how you appear, and that is your story. Then we must get Eleanor out of Belgium.
Isabel looked at Charlotte.
The Germans are ruthless. You've seen what they can and will do. I can't arrange for you all to leave at the same time. In fact, I think it would behoove Cecily to apply to become a novice at the convent.
She looked at Cecily.
Eleanor followed her gaze and took account of her sister's countenance as the word novice was uttered. Cecily could never play the part of a nun.
And don't worry, Cecily, it won't be forever. I can make the arrangements. Now, the three of you attempt nothing except the ordinary things you would do in your day until you hear from me.
She looked at Eleanor, Cecily, and Charlotte in turn. Understood?
Yes,
they said in unison.
Isabel stood up, opened the kitchen door, and was gone. Cecily leaned into her mother's arms.
Mama, no one will ever want me. No boy will marry me.
Oh, of course they will, my poor darling. Don't fret. Now then, let's get you up to bed.
Ceci, I stopped him before he...
Eleanor watched as Cecily began weeping again while Charlotte guided her upstairs. She stared at the cup of pale grey, watered-down tea set before her on the kitchen table, then stood up to gather her English leather satchel from the back of the chair. She checked her books and made sure her pencils were sharpened. Touching the tip of one pencil, she felt her nose prickle as tears began to roll down her cheeks. She had killed two men. She had lifted a weapon and done what she had been trained to do. Yet as the days went on, she would come to realize that being a predator filled her with as much fear as being prey. She hoped Isabel was right when she said fear could keep you safe. Charlotte was adamant.
I've been thinking about it all day, Isabel, and I can tell you now that I will not be separated from my girls. I am proud of what they have accomplished, though never in my most dreadful nightmares would I have seen this war, and I would not have imagined my daughter with a gun in her hand and killing with it. I allowed this work to continue because the Germans have taken their father's life. Of that I have no doubt. My husband would be proud of them both for avenging his death and the terror inflicted upon his country.
Eleanor had never heard her mother speak in such a tone, and she wondered if it was the first time Charlotte had acknowledged that Thomas was dead. Yes, she had always been a woman who was strong of spirit, but as a rule, Charlotte would wind her way around a problem, drawing people into her circle of influence rather than facing trouble head-on as if armed with a mallet. On the other hand, she knew Charlotte could be stubborn, a trait Cecily had inherited. Perhaps she too could be stubborn. She would have to think about it one day, when there was time for thinking about oneself.
You can't,
began Isabel, who had arrived at the house just after dusk.
Eleanor continued to watch her mother and Isabel, though she knew in this instance who would win the argument.
She sighed. Could so much have happened to them within hours? It seemed as if it were weeks ago that she and Cecily had lifted metal plates onto a railway line, had encountered two German soldiers. The train had indeed derailed, so at least they had accomplished their objective. They had carried out a successful mission, successful, that is, until they had been discovered by the soldiers. Isabel had assured them their work had not been in vain, that whatever happened, they were heroines of Belgium. She let them know that she had already sent her report along the line to the British, so they knew a vital German transportation link had been all but destroyed by two girls, sisters. The Allies knew they were in the debt of two young women who were once again wearing their school uniforms. Listening to Isabel, Eleanor realized she had come to think of the woman as something of an otherworldly figure, a Valkyrie from the realm of myths, or a sorceress who moved in the shadows, an operator in the half-light, half-dark, grey and grainy tones of dusk or dawn. Now she was here with the plan, yet the conversation with Charlotte was clearly not going quite as she intended.
Then we stay.
Charlotte folded her arms. Isabel sighed and shook her head.
Charlotte, you know you cannot stay.
Another deep sigh.
In that case, I will make the necessary arrangements for all three of you to leave at the same time. Be ready to depart by nightfall. She came to her feet, and as was her habit, looked with intent at each of the DeWitts in turn. Do you girls have knapsacks? Something of that order? I don't want you carrying cases or bags. They nodded. Eleanor heard her sister sniff and hoped she wasn't crying again. German soldiers had come to the house just as Eleanor was leaving for school. They had pushed her inside, told her to summon her mother and sister, and searched the house. Cecily looked awful, with a runny nose and bronchial cough that Eleanor knew was not due to any skill in the art of acting on her sister's part, though it served a purpose, and the trio were given leave to continue with their everyday ordinary lives in a small town in occupied Belgium. Charlotte hesitated, then nodded.
We will be ready, Isabel.
We tried to flee once before, so we know we must leave almost everything that ties us to our life here. Good, because in moving all three of you, others will be put in grave danger. They will be risking everything to give you a chance of escape, so don't take anything more than necessary. We will leave before dawn. The Germans might have left you alone for now, but I believe they will be back.
Remember what happened to Nurse Cavill? Said Cecily, packing underwear, a fresh blouse, and her hairbrush into the knapsack she usually employed to carry her sketchbook, paints, and pencils.
I know very well what happened to Nurse Cavill, Ceci, but this isn't the time to dwell on it, said Eleanor. Remember, you can always go along to the convent and become a novice.
Ceci blew her nose, which was red and sore.
I'm scared.
Ceci, Eleanor threw down her knapsack, and I'm terrified. But I am also fed up with listening to you and feeling as if I have a sister in kindergarten and not one who is older than me. Please, help us both and stop whining.
That's enough, Eleanor. Charlotte came into the bedroom shared by the sisters. But your sister is right. You should stop whimpering, Ceci. We don't have time for it. Find some of the bravery you had at your fingertips while moving those metal plates. Cecily nodded.
Yes, Mama. I'm sorry. It's just
nothing. Do you have your petticoats with you?
The special ones.
Both girls nodded. Good. Don't take them off at all until we get to wherever we're going, until we know we're safe. And remember, you're to put on your boots again. Thank heavens Isabel didn't make us burn them. We'll be travelling some distance on foot.
Isabel came to the house at the appointed hour, and within minutes the women were walking at a determined pace through the town, using doorways to linger for a few moments if a patrol was spotted. Then they continued on. They walked for miles with not a word uttered, following Isabel in silence. Not for the first time, Eleanor wondered how old Isabel was. She'd settled on 25, an old 25, and not only that, but she had come to realize that there was an occasional inflection in her pronunciation, and she sounded a little like Charlotte. In time, Isabel held up her hand. They were in farmland now, making their way around the edge of a field close to dense woods.
Wait here, behind that hedge, said Isabel. Do not make a sound. Is that clear?
I need to...
Then relieve yourself behind a tree, says he. Eleanor, keep watch. I will return in 20 minutes.
As the sun rose, they watched Isabel make her way around the field, maintaining her usual marching momentum. She never seemed to run, but could move at a speedy walk. Eleanor wondered whether she had perfected the gait to avoid the risk of falling or being seen. Was it harder to spot someone striding out than someone running? She thought it might be. Speed can lead to errors, and errors can lead to death. Prey run while predators stalk them. Focusing on the route Isabel had taken, Eleanor soon identified a speck in the distance and knew the woman in whom they had placed so much trust was returning. Isabel reached the hedge 10 minutes later and climbed through.
Now, we have to be very, very careful. I am going to lead you to a farmhouse where we will meet the couple who will be taking you across the border.
You're not coming with us?
Asked Cecily. Isabel shook her head. Not to the border, though I am sure I will see you all again soon. Come along. We don't have much time, and keep up with me.
At the corner of each field, Isabel stopped, lifted her binoculars, and scrutinized the land around her. Only when she deemed it safe and clear did they move again. Soon they approached a farm at the corner of another field. Once again, Isabel indicated they should remain in place as she went ahead. Eleanor watched as she knocked on the farmhouse window and stood back. The door opened to reveal an older man, tall with grey hair. Even from a distance, she could see that his clothing had known better times, with trousers baggy and worn, a jacket over his collarless shirt and a scarf tied at his throat. His neck was folded forward as if he had sustained an injury or fallen from a height, and when he turned around to step back inside the house, Eleanor thought it seemed as if he had no head, that she was looking at a man walking into the house with nothing above the shoulders. The headless horseman in his home. Isabel beckoned to the women and chivied them into the farmhouse. Inside, the man and his wife stood side by side to greet them. Isabel pointed to each of the DeWitts in turn. Charlotte, Cecily, and Eleanor. I would like you to meet Uta and Tim. Uta and Tim are my heroes. The couple smiled, looked at one another, and laughed. Eleanor wondered when she had last laughed. When had she even heard someone happy? Or seen something comical? When was there anything to be light-hearted about? Uta, with grey hair pulled back into a tight bun and wearing clothing that could have belonged to her husband, nodded and greeted the women, first in perfect English and then in French. I am from Amsterdam, so I learned English and French, because, well, who learns Dutch apart from the Dutch? Tim smiled at his wife again. I learnt it, dear Uta. Isabel cleared her throat. Uta and Tim are known at the border because they visit their children and Uta's family when they can. The farm keeps them busy here, though, and the border guards know they will return. She reached into her jacket and handed an envelope each to Charlotte, Cecily, and Eleanor. You are now Uta and Tim's family. Everything there is in order. Charlotte is the wife of Uta and Tim's son, Piet, who lives not far from the border, and Eleanor and Cecily are Uta and Tim's granddaughters. Won't they know these are forged? They are not forgeries, Charlotte. We just had to get your names on the correct documents. Now then, may I have your existing papers? For a moment, Charlotte wavered and clutched her knapsack to her chest. Then she nodded, unbuttoned the clasp, and took out the three sets of documents attesting to the identity of each of the DeWitts. She gave the papers to Isabel, who handed them to Uta. Eleanor craned her neck to watch as Uta turned around and lifted a cast-iron fork to open the door of a blackened stove, then pushed their identity documents into the flames. When will we leave? Asked Charlotte.
There's often a fair amount of movement across the border in the morning and evening, said Tim. And as we want to get you home for supper, we will leave in an hour. It's a bit of a walk to the crossing, but many will be on their way at the same time, and your papers will attest to the fact that you have gone back and forth several times.
Uta looked at Charlotte.
Charlotte, dear, to make you feel better, we know of one 12-year-old girl who accompanies disguised British soldiers across the border with some regularity. The guards do no more than glance at her papers, and those of her old uncle, and she's through. Then she comes back again to join her parents.
Do we have to see Germans? Asked Cecily.
I'm afraid you do, said Tim. But for the most part, they are boys doing a job they really don't want to do. They are hungry, too, so we try to take them a small gift of bread. All the Germans are wanting for food now, even in Germany. Perhaps you've not heard about the food riots there. If there's hardly enough for the people, you can be sure sustenance isn't getting through to the army here. We're known to be friendly, sympathetic, and our good reputation means we cross the border without incident, no matter who is with us and in what guise. He paused. And there really is no longer any other way. The fences are all electrified, and I have had enough shocks in my life, so we won't risk that route anymore.
Isabel nodded toward Tim and Uta, then turned toward the door. Eleanor looked at her mother and Cecily, who didn't seem to be paying attention. They were instead studying their papers while Uta set about making tea and Tim pulled out chairs. Eleanor ran out of the farmhouse and caught up with Isabel.
Isabel!
Eleanor, for heaven's sake, go back inside.
But I wanted to say goodbye. I wanted to thank you. Thank you for everything you taught me.
Isabel stared at Eleanor.
Linny, I taught you to use a weapon and put you in a position where you had to kill two men. That is not something to be lauded.
You taught me how to be brave, Isabel.
Isabel shook her head. No, Linny. My job is to see bravery in people and then give them a good reason to use it. You are a very brave young girl.
Will we ever see you again?
Isabel smiled. Oh, I think you might. She stared across the fields. Both could hear the echo of cannonade in the far distance, the unrelenting thunder of war ricocheting for miles and miles across the flat lands of Belgium, an almost constant rumbling that could even be heard on the other side of the English Channel. Who knows what might happen before this war is over? Uta and Tim's lightness of spirit was almost worrisome to Eleanor as they led the way across even more fields, fields now bereft of whatever crop might have grown there. When the harvest comes in, we make sure we keep enough for us and any visitors, said Tim. We knew the Germans would take everything they could for the soldiers, so we have to be quick. Our food for the winter is down in the cellar, through a door that only we know. He smiled at his wife as they joined the road, a road where a few other travellers were ambling along toward the border. Though I think we might be rather tired of vegetable root soup by the new year. But people are always hungry when their country is at war, so we think ourselves fortunate that we at least have something to warm the belly. Charlotte nodded, while Cecily looked down as she walked. Eleanor could not stop thinking about Edith Cavell. Now they were on their way. The English nurse came to mind time and again. The Germans had dealt with the woman in a brutal fashion. Is that what would happen to them? Was she now listening to Tim and Uta tell stories as they walked toward the border, only to be shot for trying to escape? What would happen to them all? Would her life end within the next hour? Some 65 minutes later, Eleanor was not only still alive, but on the other side of the border. They had reached the Netherlands, and now she was standing in a queue with Tim, Uta, her mother, and Cecily, and they were waiting for an omnibus as if it were the most normal thing in the world. Eleanor tensed. No, she would not become complacent. She would not settle her nerves. Surely the soldiers could still catch them all. It had been too easy. Well, perhaps not easy, but then easy was anything that wasn't a trial and didn't compel her to tell lies. Though, of course, she was telling lies, but it was a truthful lie because in her heart she now felt so close to Tim and Uta that she wanted to call them Nana and Grandpa. She wanted to sit in front of a fire with them listening to stories, and here she was, seated between them on the bus, their old shoulders next to hers, as if she were tightly held by two ancient oaks. Her mother had taken the seat in front of them with Cecily. Ah, Cecily, who had looked down when a German guard at the border, who could have only been a year or two older, smiled at her and flirted. Her blushes were so pink, the German apologized for upsetting her, at which point Ceci began to weep. She misses her father, said Charlotte, putting her arm around Ceci and leading her away. As they passed the border crossing and began to walk on, Eleanor thought they were bound to be called back, sure to be challenged, and became afraid that her surprise might give them all away. Then Tim put his hand on her shoulder. Come on, child, hurry up. There are other people trying to get through. He lifted his hat to the soldier as Uta handed the boy fresh bread and a pot of honey, and they moved off, shuffling away from their occupied country. After an hour on the bus, Eleanor woke up from a short but deep sleep when Tim moved to tap Charlotte on the shoulder. Your stop is coming up next, Charlotte turned around.
Our stop, I thought. We thought we would remain with you until we settled ourselves.
Tim shook his head. Someone will be meeting you. Do not fear, you will be home soon.
Home, but...
You're from England, Mrs. DeWitt?
London.
Charlotte nodded. Yes. You will be home soon.
What will we do? Who will meet us?
You are safe now.
Miss Isabel has arranged everything.
You must have done your country a great favor.
My girls...
Charlotte began, then reached forward, lifted her sturdy walking skirt enough to reveal a mud-splattered white petticoat. With nimble fingers, she prized out a small, clear stone, then reached for Tim's hand. She pressed the diamond into his palm.
Thank you. From we three DeWitts.
Uta leaned past Eleanor and took her husband's hand in hers, whereupon he opened his palm so she could see what Charlotte had given him. She closed the palm and nodded her thanks.
We will take very good care with this. Perhaps not use it until after the war. We're simple people. We don't know quite what to do with your gift.
Through sleepy eyes, Eleanor watched as her mother passed a small folded note to Uta.
I know, but here's the name of a man who will help you. Put the stone and the note away. In a safe place, and use it when you need to, whispered Charlotte.
The bus came to a slow halt. Farewells were expressed, and when Eleanor, Ceci, and Charlotte alighted the omnibus, they waved to Tim and Uta. Then their protectors were gone. Eleanor watched for a while, committing the two faces to memory, hoping she would see them again.
Mrs. DeWitt!
The DeWitt women turned at the same time to see a man of about 40 standing before them. He lifted his hat and smiled, leaning forward as if he might bow.
Good. I've found you. Now, come with me. I'll get you settled. However, I'm afraid there will be a debriefing, after which we'll go over the plan for your repatriation.
He looked at Cecily and Eleanor.
Very clever of you to register your daughters as British subjects when they were babies, Mrs. DeWitt. Made things rather easier for us.
Eleanor could see fatigue claiming her mother. Charlotte said nothing by way of reply, but simply nodded. The man had noticed.
Might be a bit of a stretch, you know, the debriefing and all that. We've rooms for you. So I'll take you over to the house now, give you a chance to put your feet up before we begin.
What's your name?
Asked Eleanor.
Mr. Strong.
It was clear Mr. Strong would say no more as he turned, indicating with his hand for them to follow. Eleanor doubted his name was Strong. She thought they must seem like a trio of ducklings following in his wake as he led the way across the street. It occurred to her, then, that she had no idea where she was. Yes, she was in the Netherlands, but was she in Amsterdam, Rotterdam? Perhaps another town altogether. Had she seen a sign for Breda when she looked out the bus window, or had she imagined it? She knew only that she had walked miles across fields and along roads, miles from there to here, many hours trudging on foot to escape something that might have happened years ago, so distant was it in her mind, except the killing wasn't far away. It was there, staring her down every time she closed her eyes.
Why do they call it a debriefing?
Asked Cecily of her mother. As Charlotte came from the room where Strong and another man, Hitchin, had asked questions of her, Eleanor looked at her sister, who had already been into the room for her debriefing. It was clear that Ceci was more like her old self, her old contrary self.
Miss Eleanor DeWitt?
Strong stood at the door and curled his finger toward Eleanor in an instruction to join him.
Well, you're a very brave young lady, said Mr. Hitchin, who stood up when she entered the room and extended his hand.
Eleanor nodded and shook the man's hand, which he then held out toward the chair on the other side of the table.
Just want to go through a few things, mainly regarding the train incident.
He looked at her as if expecting a response. Receiving none, he cleared his throat and began again.
Right then, I take it you did not see the train?
We had left by the time it came along the railway line close to town.
Yes, of course. Did you hear anything to indicate the operation's success?
Eleanor looked out of the window, then back at Hitchin. Yes. She took a deep breath. She had no intention of repeating herself. We executed the task, but on our return journey, my sister and I were seen by German soldiers. One of them began to attack my sister, and I was thrown to the ground by the other. As I regained my senses, I could see they were about to take her honor, so I stopped them. I used the weapon given to me by Miss Isabel. I had no other choice. She cleared her throat, but continued because she did not want to be cross-examined. We began to run back to our house, which was when I heard the train derail. We were less than a mile away, but I could hear the sound of every carriage and wagon on the train crashing. It was very loud. Hitchin and Strong looked at one another, then drew their attention back to Eleanor.
You carried out your task to the letter, said Hitchin. We will miss you in the field.
I won't miss the field, though. Can we go now, please?
And with that, the ordeal was over. Eleanor, her sister, and mother boarded a freighter bound for Harwich the following morning. They had been given fresh clothing and enjoyed hot baths and a good meal. Then it seemed that all too soon they were on a train from the port of Harwich to London, and once in London they were at the home Charlotte had grown up in, a Georgian terrace house close to Brunswick Square. There was a cook and a daily who came in to clean. Eleanor wondered why her mother had ever left London. If there weren't so many people wearing their mourning black, Britain wouldn't be far off normal, said the now widowed Lillian White. But at last you're here, and I'm so glad those men from the government arranged for you to come home, Charlotte dear. Eleanor was shown to a bedroom she would share with her sister, while her mother moved into her girlhood room. She fell asleep that night with her grandmother's words echoing through the memory that now would not be banished, of lifting the pistol and firing toward one soldier and then the next, blood blooming across the back of the first and then exploding from the shattered skull of the second. Perhaps they weren't far off normal, though she could not remember what normal felt like. Normal was running through the woods with Polo before the war. She wondered if people talked about normal because it felt safe. But Eleanor didn't know if her life would ever feel secure again, or if she could trust normal if it came.